To be honest, looking forward to this morning, we're gonna conclude our series. We've been walking through the past 8 weeks or so in Ecclesiastes, this Old Testament book written by Solomon, who's king of Israel, who is up until that point in time the most successful, wealthiest, powerful man in the known world. And writing near the end of his life, kind of dealing with the fact that even in great success, even in great wealth, even great power and accomplishment, there is just a certain level of vanity, meaninglessness in life. The idea that he continues to go back to is that all of life is hevel. He uses that word 38 times. It's a Hebrew word. It literally means cloud or vapor. It's that life in itself kind of gives this expectation of some substance or some things that are really going to be valuable. And yet, if we place our meaning and value and seek it out under the sun, what we find is kind of like when you walk into a cloud, that though it looks substantial from a distance, there's just nothing there substantial at all, that it just falls short. It just doesn't meet expectations. And so we're going to conclude that this week, just kind of finish up this series, look at the last thing that really is the major thesis that he puts forth in the sort of hevel of life. Got to be honest with you, it's going to be a little bit of a downer. In fact, if you read the book of Ecclesiastes, you know that Solomon in himself, as he's writing this, sort of has a really depressing take on everything. Wouldn't be the guy that you'd want to invite to parties, because over and over again, everything that you enjoy, he's kind of going, yeah, it doesn't mean anything. Good luck. Have fun with that, but it's going to be a failure for you. Right? However, he doesn't end it that way and doesn't conclude that way. And his hope in it is not that we would have a fatalistic approach to life to go, well, who cares? Life has no meaning. Life has no value. What he does desire you to do is go, life has some futility, some vanity under the sun. And so we ought to try to make and enjoy life in the joy under the Lord and not find our meaning in life only under the sun, but rather that we would look beyond that. And so he's going to conclude this today. He's really built up over and over and over again in each specific circumstance to the ultimate point that he's going to make today, which is, I think, the one that sort of trump cards all of the rest. In fact, what we've looked at week after week after week are the different things that Solomon is going to call hevel under the sun. In fact, one of the overarching points, in fact, maybe the biggest overarching point in this book, this Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes, is that life under the sun, life on this earth, has a certain element of hevel, meaninglessness, a certain element of not meeting the expectations that we put on it. And he then systematically just begins to kind of take each different aspect that we have a tendency to place a lot of our hope, a lot of our faith, a lot of our trust in, and say, this is ultimately going to fail you. We began with the idea of wisdom and knowledge and you growing and your understanding of what's around you and becoming wise. And he says, guess what? I did that. Wisest man on earth did that, knew all things, did that, better than you could, done that. And what I found was that an increasing wisdom and increasing knowledge just brought an increasing pain, showed the kind of injustice and the arbitrary nature of life so many times. And so wisdom doesn't ultimately hold the answer to life on this earth. In fact, what it's going to do is it's going to lead you to a lot of pain, because sometimes the saying is right, ignorance really is bliss. Then he goes, okay, so if I knew that wisdom wasn't going to be the answer, maybe I could find some things that many of people turn to help get some satisfaction out of life. He says, I turned to pleasure and I went to wealth and tried to make myself wealthier than anyone else who was before me, and I succeeded. I went to wine and I began to drink and enjoy a strong drink, and I succeeded in that, and I began to find women beyond any other, 700 wives and 300 concubines, and didn't want in any way for gratification and pleasure there. I succeeded more than you would. In fact, in all of these things, then I went to work and built and accomplished some things. I have built forests and parks and huge lakes that I used to irrigate them, and houses that you couldn't even imagine. 150,000 people working for 14 years on my house, and I succeeded in that too. And in all of the things of this world, all of the satisfactory pleasures of this world that you're striving after, I had them all, and I found out that eventually they just get old and boring and unsatisfying. So from there, I kept going and said, maybe I can just accomplish a lot. If I can just put a lot of things where my name is stamped on them. If I can say, look at what Solomon did, and I can have a great deal of work and accomplish. Maybe in that, in my labors, that I will find some type of lasting satisfaction. And he said, I sought out and I did a great deal. In fact, we mentioned that in Jerusalem area, there are still huge craters in the earth known as the pools of Solomon, that he built irrigation systems that still stand to this day. And he says, and it still didn't satisfy. He said, all of these things in my life just continue to come back. If life only finds its value under the sun, it just continues to come back void, continues to come back futile. It continues to come back unsatisfactory. And the thing that's so interesting is while a few thousand years has passed and the context of our life looks vastly different in a lot of very material ways, what ultimately we've found to be true over and over again throughout these 8 weeks is the things that he's saying then are the exact same things that we're experiencing now. That we live and exist in a culture filled with people who are constantly searching for some type of meaning in their life, and they're going to all kinds of different places to find it, and each and every one, if you give it enough time, just comes back void. It just comes back as less satisfying than you thought it would be. That each new thing doesn't have the value and purpose that you thought. And today, he finishes this, the end of chapter 11 and in through verse 12, with the one that I think we experience most universally and most tangibly and see in and around us, and we see it in our own lives and those who are near and dear to us. What Solomon is going to make the case for today is that if you live long enough, that there is such a vanity to life that even if you live long and prosper, you will one day wish you were dead. Amen. Merry Christmas. Let's go, huh? Have some fun. All right, so Solomon's going to get to the point where he says, here's the craziest thing about life under the sun. Even if you somehow manage to avoid all the injustice, even if you somehow manage to avoid a great deal of the pain, even if you somehow manage to do well for yourself and you make some money and you have some friends and you enjoy your time and things go the way that you kind of mapped them out to go, that you'll live long enough where you'll see a day where your body itself breaks down, falls apart, and you wish that death would be at your doorstep. Kind of haunting thought, isn't it? He doesn't just leave it in a general sense. In fact, here's what he's going to do. Pick up with me, and we'll start in chapter 12, then we'll come back and hit chapter 11, because I think you got to lay out the thesis that Solomon is going to make, and then from there, talk about what his solution is to this. Because if he was just someone who would diagnose a problem and go, guess what, you're going to get old, everything's going to fall apart, then you're going to die, bye, we'd be the worst church ever if that was the whole sermon, right? That you would not come back. You'd be well served not to come back. I wouldn't be lying to you, but come on. I mean, that's not the Christmas message, is it? Maybe it is. Man, some of you guys got really jacked up families. Like, I don't know what Christmas dinner looks like. It better not be that message, right? Okay, read along with me. I'll read. You follow along. It says in chapter 12, verse 1, remember your Creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come, and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. Now, what Solomon is going to do is say in the next few verses that you are going to eventually reach a time in your life where you will have no delight in the days themselves because so many things are failing and falling because there's such a temporal nature to your life that you ought to enjoy the days of your youth because they are fleeting. they're going away, that you are going to start to experience some things that you didn't experience previously. In fact, we know this to be true. We'll walk through the imagery in a second, but I was thinking about this morning because yesterday, I was actually talking to a guy that helped with this yesterday. We went and moved a family from here in the church, the Reese's, and we're helping them move from one house to the next. I got there. I got there way too early. All the heavy stuff was still there, and so I said, maybe I should go get a drink. I'll come back in a little bit here. So I began to move some stuff, and like a stereotypical man, I started to kind of look for the stuff that was heaviest and go, oh, no problem, I got this. Right? And guys, you with me? That's what we do, right? We go, no, freezer? I can take this. Well, maybe I can have one other person. I could just strap it to my back and walk it up the stairs, you know. Know that I could do that, but okay, I'll take some help, right? So the ego gets in the way a little bit. We do this. Now, here's the thing. I'm a pastor. In fact, I used to do a lot of youth and college ministry, young adult ministry, which means that not only am I a pastor, I'm a pastor who has helped literally hundreds of people move. That's just, especially you work with 18 to 30 year olds. I did that for a few years. It seems like they move like every 3 weeks, you know. It's just, it's okay because all they got is one crappy futon, but they're always moving from place to place, right? And so, and you're the pastor, so you always get called. Now I have a pickup, so it's like doubled. And so in that, there's always kind of this tendency to do that. I've been doing it since I was 18, 19 years old. It seems like moving stuff all the time. And what thing that was really common then was that you could move whatever you wanted, and I'd wake up the next day, and I would feel fine. Today, I got muscles that I wasn't sure I had that are telling me that I shouldn't have picked that one thing up, right? I've got soreness in places that are it's hard to even comprehend. And here's the crazy thing. I wasn't the oldest one there, right? I'm looking at some other faces who I'm going, I bet you feel really good, right? Here's why, because we know that as time passes, the things that we used to experience in our body, in our physical existence, begins to change, and a lot of those changes are not things that we're gonna love, but rather things that we're gonna be frustrated by and we're gonna war against for as long as we can, but we're ultimately going to succumb to. Amen? Let's look at how Solomon's going to describe them. He's going to give 10 different descriptors. It's going to be in painful detail, some of it a little too close to home for many of us, but I think it's important that you see, read, hear this imagery, walk through it. We'll have a little bit of fun together because it's just us here today, and in doing so, see how he ultimately is going to bring it to a conclusion that doesn't say, hey, you're going to get old and die, so what? But rather that in it, it's all meant to point us to something that is beyond the sun. It's meant to point us to what we celebrate so vibrantly in these weeks in particular, that God sent his son to experience those same pains, those same parts of humanity, so that we could have life that is eternal, life that is imperishable, life that is beyond the sun, that doesn't have all of these breakdowns and these failures that Solomon's about to describe. So he used a great deal of imagery in this. Some of it I'm going to explain to you, kind of mentions with the context of the time. Others you're going to be able to get right away, and we'll walk through them and look at them for just a couple minutes, okay? Verse 2, he says this, before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened. That's an imagery of death. Before you die, here's what's going to happen. The clouds return after the rain. You ever notice in and amongst the storm, what often happens most of the time, right, is upon the clouds coming, the storm coming, the rain coming, afterwards it passes, right? Normally you get a couple days of good weather to follow a large storm. What Solomon says is there's going to be some times in your life, eventually you're going to reach a point where the clouds return after the rain, that there's not going to be hurt, healing, prosperity, but rather that you're going to wake up day after day after day, and it's just going to hurt. You're not going to recover the way that you once did. When I was 4 months old, my mom dropped me. Some of you are like, oh yeah, that sounds putting some pieces together here. She dropped me, not on my head, on my leg. I broke my femur, okay? That's the biggest bone in your body. It broke my femur. They put me in a cast for a few weeks, and I was fine following that. You know that at a certain age, someone breaks their femur, and it is almost assuredly a death sentence. Why is that? Well, because clouds return after the rain. Because eventually what happens in this perishable body of ours is things begin to break down, and what once hurt, healed, and moved on has just hurted, just hurts. Like I said, drop me, 4 months old, got it, okay. It just hurts, and it hurts, and it hurts, and it hurts. And one storm leads to the next, and to the next, and to the next. And one of the things that changes now is injuries that once healed up in my body just start to leave some lasting legacy, right? This finger just isn't quite as straight as it used to be and never will be again. This thumb just doesn't reach as far as it was supposed to, and it never will again. This ache, this pain just always lingers. Solomon says there's going to be a day where clouds will return after the rain in your life, that one thing that used to heal will just stay. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble, the watchman was a reference to your arms and hands. So there's going to be a day where what you could once do with your hands, you can no longer do. There's going to be a day where your dexterity begins to leave. There's going to be a day where arthritis sets in, or you once could hold something steady and you can't do it any longer. There's going to be a day when the watchmen of the house fail you. He keeps going. Look what he says. And the mighty men stoop. This was your legs. He said, not only are your hands, your arms going to fail you, but eventually your legs are going to start to sag. We tease my wife's grandma, sweetest lady in the world, but every time she sees me, she tells me I'm getting taller. Said, I can promise you that's not what's happening. Right? You get a growth chart. Maybe you have one of these in your house. We have a growth chart with our kids, right? The big like wooden measuring stick is real popular now, that you mark like where your kids are on that growth chart, and each time they kind of grow a half an inch, they're super excited about it. You know, what you don't see is some of you in your house need to have a growth chart where it's going in the other direction, right? As you begin to shrink shorter and shorter and shorter as the mighty men stoop, right? Just being honest with you guys. I know you're like, what is the point of this? I'm so angry at him right now for pointing these things out. I'm just reading the Bible. And the thing is, I know I'm walking down this road. I might not be as far as some of you, but I'm heading in that direction if the Lord gives me enough days. And so is everyone else. He keeps going, says, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few. What do you think he's talking about there? Yeah. Says, guess what else? They're going. And Solomon don't got dentures in those days. He says, you're gonna start. I was talking to someone about this yesterday. It's going to be a time, if you haven't gotten there already, where you go to a restaurant and your biggest concern on the menu is what you could actually eat physically. Right? I'm not talking about Weight Watchers. I'm talking about, I don't think I could chew that. He says, your teeth are going to betray you and fall out. Look at, he keeps going. He says, those who look through the windows grow dim. What's he talking about? Yeah. He's going to go, you might be someone who once had 20/20 vision, and it is no longer. You live long enough and the cataracts come into play. You've got quad focals where you can look through all these different parts of your glasses and see magnified, smaller, larger, longer, wider, whatever it might be. But you take those off and you can't see anything. He keeps going. He says, the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. And he goes on. He says, and the daughters of song will sing softly. What's he talking about there? He says, you're not going to be able to hear either. We got enough time for this. Let me do this. This is kind of fun. Okay, so some of you know, I teach science. We have a homeschool community that meets on Fridays. Here, there's like 40, 50 kids from a few different churches that kind of come together, meet here for one day a week where we're doing school together. And they asked me to teach science during that time. Big interest of mine, kind of fun things to do. So we run these science experiments. So this past Friday, we did an experiment on how your sense of hearing works. And so we're trying to teach these kids kind of what their ears are doing, how it's working. And in fact, if you didn't know this, your ears hear kind of a pretty broad range of pitch, right? Really low pitch noise. They measure that in a measurement called hertz. You can hear as low as 20 hertz. You can hear, if you have real good hearing, you can hear as high as like 22, 23,000 hertz, okay, in pitch. Now, as you damage your ears, or what's more common is as you get older, your hearing starts to fail you, and what you lose are the highest pitches of sound. So let's... let me find a young person and a not so young person. Abby, come here. You're just the first one I saw. Okay, ready? If you be quiet, you can all kind of participate in this, right? Listen to this. Can you hear that? Most of you can hear that? Okay. Can you hear that? Watch it again. Seth, you can hear it, right? You hear it just fine. Daniel can hear it. I mean, I can hear it, but I. There are a whole bunch of you, and listen, it's not quiet. There's a whole bunch of you who just can't hear what you could once hear, right? It's kind of an annoying sound to you. It doesn't mean anything to a whole bunch of you. Maybe that's good. Guys, I'm not saying that that's a good thing at times, but you know, you've been in your house. Move on. We'll just move on. He says, listen, the sound of the grinding mill is going to be low, that you're not going to hear what you once heard. However, lest you think there's some advantage to that, he says in the middle of this, and one will arise at the sound of the bird that... though you feel like you can't hear the way you once did, even the smallest noise at night seems to wake you up. That you can't sleep through the night like you once did, that rest betrays you in the ways that it once was. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road. This one's a little more complex. What he's saying is you're going to get to a point where life itself just seems to move so fast. And you seem to just kind of be a little less and less and less comfortable with it. I saw this last week. I thought this was so interesting, right? We just used my phone, right? I grabbed this from one of the kids here who is like 6 years old that he was playing with as a toy. This was my phone 10 or so years ago. Some of you had this exact same phone. It was like the most popular phone in America, right? And this was the pinnacle of technology at one time. And I remember with this phone telling my parents at the time, hey, this phone is awesome. You can do all this thing, these things. You could text. They had this thing where you could text and you only had to press one button and it would guess what words you were texting, and it was like a certain type of text language. I tried to explain that to my parents, and I remember my own parents going, there's no way we're going to learn that because we'll be dead before it matters, right? They're like half right. It doesn't matter anymore. But a lot of you know that your four-year-old is better with technology than you are. That life, the context of our culture, has a way of just moving so fast that it creates a level of discomfort about the very realities around us. The almond tree blossoms. This one's kind of fun. Almond trees budded in Israel and were very green, and then they would blossom. Their blossoms were white, and then right after that, they would shed all of those blossoms, right? I'm looking at some of the top of your heads and knowing you're either getting there or it's wintertime, right? The almond tree blossoms. The grasshopper drags himself along. That there's a time in your life where athleticism, running, jumping, bounding, leaping is an everyday part of your life. For many of you, the most athletic thing you'll do this week is tackle a flight of stairs. That all of a sudden, the things that were once easy for you are calculated, measured, and difficult. That life is fleeting. One more, and then we'll move on from this. I can tell you're like, okay, we get the point, right? He finishes with this. This is really interesting. You think about Solomon as the author here, but he says the caperberry is ineffective. The caperberry was at that time a known aphrodisiac. And so Solomon goes, by the way, after your hair is gone, your teeth are gone, you can hardly move around and walk and basically don't have anything working for you. You can't hear, can't see, can't basically move. Then your desire is going to leave you too. That life has this way of showing us that even when it goes well, it's fleeting, it's leaving. We are ultimately dying here on this earth and in this physical body. Temptation to just be done right now. You would hate me, right? Let's move to this. He asked you this question because Solomon has a way of kind of doing this over and over and over again throughout Ecclesiastes. This is how he's finishing it because this is kind of the trump card to go, ultimately, even if you just move past the things, the failing nature of wisdom and wealth and prosperity and accomplishments, and you get through all of it, just know that your very body itself is going to fail, fall apart, and you're going to die. And in this, his point is not, so just deal with it. Life under the sun is hevel. His point is this, two things. One, that you soak in, that you take advantage of, that you find great joy in the common grace of God under the sun in all of the things that he does give. Right? This, you go back with me to chapter 11. He closes chapter 11 this way, kind of bookends this picture of what it looks like to know that life is fleeting. It's going to fail you. It's going to break down. You're going to die. He says, rejoice. This is 11 verse 9. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So remove grief and anger from your heart. Put away pain from your body because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. What he's not saying is do whatever feels right, do what's going to make you happy. He's saying in the light of the fact that God is beyond the sun, that he will bring all things to judgment, that there is a God and you are meant to live for him, take some joy in the time in this life where you have body parts that work. Find joy in the here and the now in this life, knowing and in the context of who God is and that it is fleeting. He goes on in chapter 12 to say, then you ought to remember your Creator in the days of the youth while you still have days that you can delight in, that you would find your joy in the Lord. But more so, the main point that he's making, you find joy in the midst of this hevel, but look at verse 7. He's walked through this whole imagery, and he closes with this. Then dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Here's his main thesis throughout the whole of Ecclesiastes. There is a certain degree of vanity, a certain degree of futility, amount of hevel, frustration, meaninglessness in life on this earth. And if you haven't experienced it, you just haven't lived long enough yet. That it's ultimately going to bring you a great deal of time that is painful, that is frustrating, that just doesn't make sense, that just doesn't go the way you want it to go, that isn't what you expected it to be. And ultimately, we're meant to, one, find joy in the common grace of God, but much more so, what he's going to reiterate over and over and over again is this hevel exists under the sun on this earth, and it's meant to point you to the fact that there is a God beyond the sun who loves you and cares for you and is one day going to see your spirit return to him, because you weren't created only for life under the sun. That's why it just doesn't seem to make sense like you want it to. That you and I are meant to look beyond the sun. That you and I are meant to know in the hevel of this world, in the frustration and the meaninglessness of this life, that God gave it to you, and that he gave you a spirit, gave you a soul. He intends more for you than just what you can see and feel and experience. Because if your whole life is wrapped up in only what you can see and feel and experience under the sun, it's going to leave you with a lot of pain and a lot of dissatisfaction and a lot of empty promises. But that's not where it ends. Rather, we look to God who is beyond the sun, who our spirit will one day return to. He actually concludes Ecclesiastes in verse 13 and 14. The conclusion when all has been heard is, fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, which everything is hidden, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Here's what's so incredible. Here's what December means for us as believers. We know and serve a God who is beyond the sun, yet loves us so much that in just a couple weeks, we will remember and celebrate the time that he took his son and sent him under the sun. That God didn't look beyond the heavens and go, good luck. But rather that in his great love for us, took his one and only son and sent him to earth, sent him into the mess, into the hevel, into the meaningless nature of life, to live in the flesh and to die for each and every one of us. So that as Solomon concludes, when God brings every act to judgment, he would look at each and every one of us and not see us as those who are guilty of unrighteousness in the hevel, which every one of us is, but rather that he would see us as innocent because his son bore his wrath for us. That we celebrate in a couple weeks the coming of Christmas, the coming, the birth of Jesus that was always sent so that he would redeem us, that he would one day die the death that each and every one of us is going to die and experience for us, so that he could save us, so that he could redeem us, that he could buy us back out of the hevel of this life. You see, Solomon's point is that life under the sun, life on this earth, has a certain way of disappointing, has a certain way of not going the way we would like it to go, that things just go wrong, they break down, and they die. And yet, God didn't let it stay that way. God loves you so much that he sent Jesus to change it all.